Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good evening. Welcome to the AI Comic Pod, episode 28. We made it to 28. It's just me and Stu this time. How are you doing, Stu?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. It's nice to be back, just me and thee.
It is.
We've had too many guests recently. It's been getting a little bit, it's a bit crowded, isn't it, with Joey and Marco sticking the nose in.
It's a bit crowded. Marco never shuts up, does he? I know. Jesus. So we thought we'd come back and cover something that we've probably been... I don't know. It's been around a while now, so I would imagine everyone's seen it at this stage. I'd hope so.
If you've not, it's tough shit because it's been out for 6 weeks now. So that's plenty. That's plenty of time to sit down and watch 13 episodes.
13 episodes of Luke Cage. Ta-da. We are talking about. So we've obviously watched every offering that Marvel's had to. Marvel Netflix has produced so far. We've discussed them all except Jessica Jones, which hasn't really come to pass. I think we may cover Jessica Jones when series two is imminent, perhaps, because it's next year. I think it's lined up for, is it? Maybe. I'm not sure.
I think so. Netflix, Marvel's really busy next year. They started filming. The Defenders started, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So that's good. So The Defenders is obviously the culmination of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist. So that I think they're still filming Iron Fist.
I think it's due March. It must have wrapped pretty well. It'll be close to wrapping.
I think there was a bit of an overlap, and they're also. I think they might be working on the Punisher as well, but the Punisher isn't part of the Defenders. He may well appear as a guest or as a crossover, but he's not one of them. It is only the four. So. It's not unthinkable.
Oh my god, that series could be something else.
It's sounding like they're going, you know, they're going full comic book as you would expect them to do. They're not deviating too much.
No. There's a lot of good source material.
Shitload of research and loads of reading up on really seminal titles. I'd love to offer more information on them, but I can't because I've never read the damn things.
Yeah, I mean, we talked obviously about John Bernthal and Punisher, and obviously doesn't link into Luke Cage, but it's nice to see on the latest Walking Dead that Shane got a name drop. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yes,
it
did.
It just reminded me, like, Walking Dead has obviously been going so long now, but it was that whole, you know, Rick never until that point apparently is really discussed Shane.
He's not.
And Laurie, for that matter, and their relationship. And the fact that he's openly admitted, you know, Dawson's not his. So it was quite a, there you go, there's a spoiler for anyone listening.
Yeah.
If you didn't know already. But we are here to discuss Luke Cage.
Not The Walking Dead.
Not The Walking Dead. I think the thing is, we could probably do a weekly Walking Dead pod. I think we're all, you know...
Yeah, and I know one person would be well up for that.
Yeah, just the person, I know. But Luke Cage, so a pretty big offering, I'd say, from Netflix. Obviously, the production value that goes into these series, and we discussed it previously, is pretty high-end stuff. So, and there was a lot of build-up and a lot of hype to this.
I think there was actually more build-up to this one than there has been for any of the others. I mean, Daredevil...
Massively, yeah.
Daredevil and Jessica Jones had a reasonable amount, but the Luke Cage build-up started a long time ago. We got a first proper teaser after the final credits of the last episode of Jessica Jones, didn't we? You got that scene where he was walking in the gym and everyone was shooting at him and he was saying, "I'm sick of having to buy new clothes." That was the first time we got actual footage.
And obviously his influence within Jessica Jones was quite prominent.
Because he was in what?
Pass.
Maybe was he in five, six episodes?
I think he felt like he was in the whole end of the back end of the series, really. So, yeah, he probably was in five,
nice
six episodes.
Nice choice of words about him being in the whole back end.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I like that. He certainly was enjoying the back end of Jessica Jones at one stage or another. So it did feel like the build-up to this, and there's a lot of talk in the music. So, obviously, you know, heavy rap influenced and hip-hop and blues and soul. And I don't know, it seemed to connect with a lot of people on that level, and that Netflix seems to have taken it up a gear a little bit in terms of the way they produce something.
None of the other series had been really, really... I mean, they were music-centric. So much of the show centred around the club.
It's almost like there was a song to go with every narrative. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of series that are produced with music being the kind of forefront of
Look
the
at
mind.
Westworld.
And obviously,
Westworld's doing that very heavily now. Even though
hugely, yeah,
it's
playing
Wild
like Radiohead
West Frontier
on the,
times,
on the
that
mic.
They've got like old timey piano recordings of the
like
only
Black
one that's
Hole
coming
Sun.
To head was Black Hole Sun, which was. And yeah, they're doing a very similar thing. And I understand the reason why, and I enjoy that, because then you get to marry two of your favourite things. You get to marry the TV with the music, and all the emotion you feel when you hear a certain song, and the nostalgia comes up when you're watching the show.
Yeah, whenever I saw producers talk of the music within Luke Cage and anyone that kind of contributed to it, and there's some pretty big rappers and hip-hop artists involved and stuff, they were saying that it's all about getting the feel of what it's like in Harlem and you know, the kind of music scene in the clubs. And it's clever because it does, you know, I know we're on a, and this is a nice, healthy plug, but we're on a Red Dead Redemption pod. We did the Great One Up podcast with Guy, who was awesome. And we talked GTA. And I know you're not a massive fan necessarily, but GTA and Red Dead Redemption is quite synonymous with music. And there's certain music that triggers certain kind of feelings and emotions, like you said. And Luke Cage is all about that. It definitely had that, you know, that music was really synonymous. It really linked everything together. And I think probably... as much as there's a lot of good things, and we'll obviously go on to talk in much more detail, but I think the music was probably one of the best things about it. I just thought it was such good production, and it really helped kind of set the tone.
Yeah, and it's what you'd expect, because there's a lot of the Harlem Renaissance period. You know, Harlem became synonymous with music, with theatre, and with performing arts in general. So yeah. it would have done a great disservice to the entire area if they didn't show. I mean, music in that region is just so embedded in your DNA. If you're from Harlem, you grow up around that. It's your day-to-day life.
As I'm sure, if they shoot something in like New Orleans, they're not going to not play jazz. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Harlem is very much in tune with that kind of, and New York in general. I mean, New York's got kind of huge kind of buzzing music scene, and it's a lot of it's linked over to the UK, and it's kind of a lot of founding fathers of hip hop and various. So, yeah, I think they felt like they probably had to do it justice, and I think in fairness, they completely did it justice.
Yeah, they did for the criticisms that the show has received, some of which are baffling. I haven't seen anybody make any negative references to the music. If anything, whenever anyone's summarising it, one of the first two or three things that people mention is how good the music is. People wanting the soundtrack to drop so they can get it and listen to it. And then, of course, you have really big guest appearance when Method Man's in it. Is it...
Yeah.
It was one of the last few episodes, wasn't it, when everything's really, really getting on top.
He basically, he wants one of his hoodies, does he?
Yeah, and he's in as himself, and he's got his, Bulletproof Love, an original song that he wrote for this, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it is.
It would make sense, wouldn't it, based on the title?
Yeah, it would.
With Luke being so bulletproof and lovely.
He is indeed. I think, you know, with Luke Cage, it does receive criticism. And I think part of it, and we're going to kind of touch upon it, is because it's predominantly black, and the criticism leveled at it was that the white, you know, white people in the show were basically corrupt policemen. And then, you know, it's all this kind of nonsense, basically. And it's like, well, Harlem was... And doesn't necessarily remain, because it's obviously New York's extremely diverse, but, you know, a strong black area in the States. And, you know, that's just true to its roots. Do you know what I mean? It would be crazy for it to be, you know, we talked about Marvel in the past changing the role of certain individuals. And if you watch Doctor Strange, which we're both fans of, and we will come and review it, and this isn't a spoiler, but there was a lot of talk about the lack of kind of Chinese actors or East Asian actors in that, and that they changed the Tilda Swinton part, the ancient one, to being a bald white British lady compared to what it was in the comic. But you know, there are some elements where they've got to diversify, and it makes sense to do that. But there's certain elements where they've got to stay true to the source material, and Luke Cage would have been crazy without being true to itself, you know.
So. And you think that the source material of this isn't comics?
It's a
world famous district of one of the most famous cities in the world. People know about Harlem in the way people know about Brooklyn and LA and Liverpool and Paris and Milan and what have you. It's a very, very, very famous part of a very famous city.
Yeah.
If you were depicting a show in this time period, and you had a load of white faces, it would look stupid. And then they would come under some serious criticism for whitewashing. Because, of course, there are going to be white faces. You know, there are some in there. But, of course, 99% of the major featured cast are going to be black. It's a very heavily black area of New York. But big deal. You know, most of Daredevil has been white. Most of Jessica Jones has been white. Most of Iron Fist is going to be sort of a cross between white and Asian. Why not have the black show, you know, that features a very important character? Luke Cage is an incredibly important character. Joey actually wrote a really good, Joseph Connors, that is, wrote a really good article about Luke Cage explaining his roots in the blaxploitation era.
Yeah.
And Luke Cage was a big deal. You know, I always get confused whether it was him or Black Panther, but I think it might have been Luke Cage was either the first or one of the first black superheroes to have his own title. So Marvel would have just been shooting themselves in the face and every other appendage going if they'd then gone, you know what, we need more whiteys in this one. It just, and I would have been the first to criticise them, because why not?
Yeah, me too.
And it's hard to say that when you look at these things that it's not, you know, the criticism's not coming from the wrong place.
No, and I read a lot of people going, well, you know, the music's black and the actors are black, and I'm like, you're just basically coming across as a racist, and probably are. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong. Look, I don't go out and seek certain white music or black music or whatever. It's just, you enjoy what you enjoy. It has no boundaries. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I kind of love about, well, what I should love about modern life. You know, my kids should grow up liking what they want. It shouldn't, you know, come from their background or their history, or, you know, because their parents are white, they can only like a certain type of music or watch a certain type of television, or it doesn't matter. I want them to educate themselves with whatever they want to educate themselves with. The more the better for me, you know. So and music in particular does, it influences cross range. I mean, you know, Beastie Boys are quite famous in New York, and they've always used hip hop in their style. Do you know what I mean? And the influence from everyone, It doesn't matter. Your roots are your roots, and you take with it what you want. And it does frustrate me when I read those kind of things, because I think it's amazing. I think, you know, what I liked about the show was that, basically. I mean, I think there are some flaws, and we'll probably go on to them, but one of them, or the main one, wasn't that it was set in that. It felt authentic in terms of what they were trying to express and the characters. And they had some great actors, you know, getting those messages across.
And think about it from, like you were saying about the kids, think about it from a, you know, the point of view of a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid. Comics can be difficult to get into because very often you've got to go out your way to go and find them. It's not as easy as going to a big supermarket and picking them up over here. But imagine if you're watching Netflix and you see, hang on, who's that? You know, you've watched Daredevil, you like the Marvel films, and so far in the Marvel films, you've only really had Rhodey. You've briefly had Black Panther in Civil War.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other major black players. Samuel L. Jackson, sorry, is Nick Fury. But he's not really a hero, is he? He's the administrator.
No, exactly.
So if you're going through that and you're looking and you're going, well, who's this guy? Holy shit, well, he's a black superhero. He's essentially, he's like a black Captain America, because that's along the sort of lines of what they were trying to do. They were trying to recreate, as a lot of other people did in Marvel, people wanted to recreate the super soldier serum because everyone wanted an army of super soldiers.
And but he's a person for the people. Do you know what I mean? He's the leader within the community, you know, and that's the same kind of element that Captain America gives off. It's like kind of, you know,
he
comics,
could beat the shit
comics
out of
are deeper
wants,
than people. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
he doesn't
have to. He's a calm man. He uses violence when he has to. He doesn't go out and use his powers because he, you know, for any kind of selfish means. He's almost hesitant to use them. He would rather talk his way out of a situation than punch his way out, and that's exactly like Captain America. Captain America knows he can go in. Look at that lift scene from The Winter Soldier. You know, he can take out as many people as he needs to, and you're not going to get a, you know, he won't get a scratch on him. But he would rather use his brain than his fists, and that's a brilliant thing about him, because for the time period that Luke Cage came out, black men were being depicted in a very certain way. They were being depicted as being pimps and gangsters and shit like that, and then out comes Luke Cage, and he's an eloquent young man, he's very charming, he's incredibly polite, but if you got on the wrong side of him, he can put you through a brick wall.
Exactly.
He's always been in comics a brilliant role model, so to stick that on Netflix, like you said, how can you see the negative side of that without people jumping and going, well, there's some kind of an undertone there that maybe you don't want people to pick up on? But it's hard not to, without us trying to be controversial, because controversial is definitely not in our repertoire, is it? We're childish, we're very, very stupid, but controversial, no.
No, it's generally not something we get into the aims of, and you know, we're obviously football fans, and there's always a lot of talk about, you know, racism around football and player debates and things, and it is hard because it's such a difficult subject to approach, and
especially for a couple of white guys.
And we just, I mean, you know, enjoy what you enjoy. That's the thing. Like, it's a great series. Just take it on the value that it's a great series. It does frustrate me more than anything else.
And it's been mostly very positive feedback. And logical place to start moving away from anything that's going to make us, you know, sound too serious, because we don't want people to think we're serious. We're not. We're a pair of grown-up children.
No, we're a pair of, you know, dickheads.
I was going with grown-up children.
Okay, sorry, I went a bit too far there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let's just reel it back in a little bit.
Okay, well, if we're talking Luke Cage as a kind of hero, I guess we're going to talk about Mike Colter's performance, which I think is... He's just effortlessly smooth throughout, isn't he?
Is probably the best way to describe him.
Yeah.
The man just oozes charisma. And I was just reading up about him before he put on 30 pounds of muscle. That's the sort of level. I mean, he's a built guy anyway, but that's the level.
Yeah.
You look at what Christian Bale did for the Batman films. You look at what Hugh Jackman's done for his various Wolverine roles. And if anything, Hugh Jackman's putting on more as he gets older, because he's presumably having to fight his aging. You know, as he gets older, it must be harder for him to put the mask back on after he's lost it from not sticking with his diet. But Mike Colter, he looks like he didn't have a single millimetre or ounce of fat on him from head to toe, apart from his earlobes.
He was in like boxer shape, wasn't he? But when you know when they're going up towards the prime fighter, they're in the complete peak of their condition, and you've seen a few actors do it in recent years and stuff, and it takes some doing.
Well, look at Will Smith when he did the Ali film. He trained as a boxer with boxing coaches for something like 9 months, and I remember reading things about him saying technically he was in that good a shape. He could have stepped into the ring. He was at that time.
That's said a boxer. About a few people. I mean, Mark Wahlberg did it for The Fighter.
Jake Gyllenhaal
was incredible, you know, and
he looked like somebody taking his head and put it on Sylvester Stallone.
I know. Chadwick Boseman for Creed, and he's in the Black Panther film as well coming up.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen Creed, but that's. And I think it's the same director that did Creed, so it's going to be quite exciting because I like that film, and I think it's quite a modern take. And again, you know, it's strong black lead, and I think that's important. You know, it's
without Hollywood resorting to being too cheesy. They didn't lean too heavily, did they?
That's my thing.
Look, Rocky.
No. I was really surprised because I'm not a huge Rocky fan. No. Look, I know it's got its kind of
it's
nostalgic. Kitsch. It's got nostalgic kind of value to it. I get that. There's a lot of kind of 80s films that have that nostalgia of your childhood and youth and all that kind of stuff growing up. But they did need to make a modern take on it. And I think Chadwick Boseman's performance is amazing in Creed, and I think he's going to be good in Black Panther another. And I think the director will be, you know, I think it's going to make it quite exciting. But that's another, you know, obviously, you know, another black performance for, you know, Marvel. And they are branching out a little bit and using characters that it's good that they're doing that. Do you know what I mean? Because I was worried it would be a bit samey, and, you know, there are criticism leveled at them. But I think they are branching out.
Hang on. I've just realised. It wasn't Chadwick Boseman in Creed.
What?
It was Michael B. Jordan.
Sorry. That's me getting my... Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther, right?
Yes. Okay. Michael B. Jordan was the Human Torch.
Of course he was.
Fantastical Four.
Yeah. Was he in the modern Fantastical Four or the older Fantastical Four?
He was in the modern one because Chris Evans, a.k.a. Captain America, was in the old one, wasn't he?
Oh, he was, wasn't he? Yeah, Fantastic Four. They better not do that again. I mean, surely not.
Supposedly. From what I've heard, Marvel are trying to buy the rights back.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Like they've done with Spider-Pants.
Spider-Pants, indeed. I think they're both... Well, yeah, of course they're both cast in Black Panther because he's going to, you know, Michael B. Jordan's in it as well. So, and the Creed director. So it's going to be good. Is that next year or the year after?
I think it's the year after. Next year is Guardians 2, Thor, Ragnarok and Spider-Man.
Nice. That's a trilogy.
Black Panther is, I think it might be the start of 2018, yeah.
And then we're looking.
And then we're looking
Ant-Man,
at like
Ant-Man, maybe.
I couldn't tell you. I'd have to get the.
That'd be some knowledge.
I'd have to get the timeline off.
We've gone completely off topic again,
as we tend
typical
to do.
Of us. But we were busy praising Mike Colter's performance.
Yeah, and he's not alone in his performance. I mean, he's not just got the look of, you know, like we were saying, of a prize fighter and a believable superhero. You know, if he punched someone through a wall, you look at him and go, yeah. Yeah, fair enough, he could punch someone through a wall. But when he's speaking, he's believable. He carries the charisma across every word he says. You know, he's not speaking overly... you know, sometimes people speak a little bit too cleverly for themselves and it sounds like they've just eaten a thesaurus and a dictionary at the same time. Everything he says sounds completely believable for him as a character, but as him as an actor, he doesn't seem uncomfortable with what he's saying and what he's doing.
No, I think we said he's smooth, really... but I think he appears like completely comfortable. You know, sometimes
that's cool as a cucumber. He doesn't seem fake. He gets angry and he sort of hulks up a little bit, but he doesn't ever seem like the red mist comes down. He doesn't ever seem to get so angry that he loses it.
And even if he's injured, and obviously there's that scene obviously where they develop the bullet that can hurt him, but he's confident in his own. No, he's never really asked. That's what surprised me about it. It's like there's never an ounce of sweat or uncomfortable nature in his performance. And I think that's what depicts Luke Cage so well, that he's completely in control at all times. He doesn't fear. Yeah, and he is humble. And I think you get that across. Even in the first few scenes in the barbershop, you get that early impression. God, you threw your voice there incredibly.
Yeah. Wilson, you weren't supposed to speak until we're talking about Rosario Dawson. Sorry, he's getting all excited. Wilson's sort of an unofficial co-host today.
He is indeed. He'd probably do a better job at remembering actors' names than I do. and yeah, I just think his performance, obviously, it's such a crucial one. And he's the lead of all, you know, when a show's named after you, which it is in Daredevil, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, you need to be crucial to the you know, performance of the show. And I think he nails it, you know, start to finish. And I think the fight scenes, again, we talk about a lot about these on Jessica Jones, which were quite comical, but really much more believable in Daredevil. And I thought they worked well in Luke Cage. I think the only one that I was a little bit disappointed with was the big battle he had.
With Cottonmouth. Cottonmouth, with Diamondback.
Diamondback, yeah. I love that they're named after snakes. I think that's just ace. But yeah, I'm not sure Diamondback's performance, and I'm not sure the actor's name. I'll let Wilson fill that in.
That would be... sorry, what's that? His name is Eric LeRae Harvey.
Nice.
I don't know how the hell he knows that. I think he's been going on my phone at night.
Impressive. I'm not sure his performance sold me entirely. I think it felt a little bit... It felt quite 80s. I don't know if that's the way to describe something, but it felt a little bit overperformed and a bit over sinister. A bit hammy, perhaps is correct. Yeah, he was the main antagonist after Cottonmouth, and I think whereas Cottonmouth brought a little bit more depth and perhaps, you know, tragedy in his past, and you saw that in the performance. I don't think you quite got that sense with Diamondback, and I think he was one of the major letdowns of the series, just because I think he could have been a lot more. Personally,
that's fair. Yeah, he just seemed like a spoiled kid, didn't he, to have gone, yes, to the lengths he did, just because, you know, it was his mum, wasn't it, and Luke's dad had added away. Just it seemed a little bit... It would have...
To hold that level of grudge and to do all those things, it seemed a very extreme reason why. I mean, Cottonmouth was trying to run an empire, you know.
If you'd flipped the two stories, it would have been more believable for Cottonmouth to be the way he was with Diamondback's upbringing, that kind of thing, because Cottonmouth saw some shit. You know, the things when he was with... it was his auntie, wasn't it, when he was staying at her house. The things he saw when he was a young kid, the shit he was subjected to.
He almost turned out to be
quite well-rounded, because at least he wasn't a complete psycho. He had violent tendencies and he had urges that he needed to take care of, but at the end of the day...
Chucking a guy off a bridge, or not off the roof.
He had a great level of creativity. The scenes when he was playing piano, you started to warm to him, didn't you?
He seemed like
a bit of a tortured soul. Like you said, all he wanted to do was play piano, but he was thrust into this world that he was never really 100% comfortable in. But he had to take over that world from what was her name? Oh, the auntie.
Oh, I don't know. I won't be able to bring that back.
No.
But yeah, he was thrust into it, and I think his performance was strong. I thought he...
I'm not going to pronounce his name. I'll just make a mess of it.
I think Mahershala Ali.
That sounds about right. Yeah, there you go. So if anyone's offended by how crap that was, shout at Rory. It's at Rory Greenfield. Yeah. Tell him off.
Come on, bring it on.
I'd say overall, he was probably my favourite portrayal. I think he was absolutely brilliant. The way he spoke, again, he was eloquent. He was very, very poignant when he spoke, but he was able to flip a switch and go from calm and collected to violent rage in, you know, less than a second. And he had some cracking scenes. We've been educated, haven't we, in the past about imagery. The best scene for me, the best image in that whole series, they actually gave it away in one of the trailers, was the Everybody Wants to Be the King, where he's talking to the guy that he's interrogating, and he's got the picture of Biggie behind him with the crown.
Yeah.
And as he gets closer to the camera, the crown suddenly appears as if it's on his head as a piece.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It was genius. I thought that worked really well.
And that whole speech, that whole bit of dialogue was really, really powerful. He was a very powerful character.
He was very
sort of Godfather-esque.
I like the whole balcony above a club thing. I think that's a very kind of iconic, you know, like you said, kind of Godfather, but you know, clubs of that nature, you know, crime films of that nature where you've got the antagonist who's above watching over, you know, I really like that kind of imagery. I thought the whole sections in the club were really well done. Obviously, they used a lot of time on the streets, as they did in Jessica Jones and Daredevil, but I thought when they're in the club, it was a little bit different for what they'd done before. You know, they'd never used a venue that much impact, and I thought it was a really good setting for a lot of the kind of good scenes that went on, especially between him and Maria Dillard, is it?
Yeah.
She was interesting, but quite annoying. I guess that was the portrayal, though. You're not supposed to like her, you know?
She was a bit whiny, wasn't she?
She's quite key of what it feels like a fake kind of politician might be in the States, do you know what I mean? Where it's all that kind of frontage of you know, the neighbourhood this, the neighbourhood that. And I think she started out like that, but it was so easy to corrupt her. And I think, in fairness, she did provide one of the most shocking moments in the whole series.
When she kills Cottonmouth. Yeah. That was the only time I felt she was convincing as the bad, as the big bad.
Yeah, she showed elements of it. I think that's the one thing about it. To me, it just didn't have the villain that it maybe needed to carry it. I think all the best things we've ever talked about in Marvel, it had that chief kind of antagonist. And
it's one of the things that Marvel in general are praised for when you look at Red Skull. And I mean, Loki is the ultimate one. Loki was brilliant. I mean, even Age of Ultron got panned, but...
No, I don't know why.
Ultron himself was a fantastic villain who was voiced.
He was a brilliant villain.
His mannerisms were fantastic. Loki will always be the yardstick against which Marvel villains are.
And I think you can see that anything you watch Tom Hiddleston in, you'll know that. Do you know what I mean? Because he's just incredible, and I think that was just genius casting. But they made that work, and it worked, you know, perfectly. But
killed Cottonmouth off a little bit quickly for me. I was really gutted when he went, but they had to transition from Cottonmouth as the bad to Dillard as the bad, and then it comes out that after all this, it's Diamondback. He's been the player in the he's been in the shadows, hasn't he, controlling everyone else? And then he makes his move.
He does make his move and kills all those people at the table, which was quite another pretty bold scene. It's they don't shy away from the elements that we like about it. I mean, you know, we've talked Flash and Arrow, and they're clearly targeted. Arrow's got some kind of violent elements, but it never showed blood in the same kind of manner. Do you know what I mean?
You'll see like a little trickle or a droplet here and there, not like...
Yeah, but it's good that it's got the license to do that, exactly. I think you need that. I mean, you know, the throwing off the roof kind of scene is pretty brutal, and the way a lot of people die in this is done pretty effectively, but pretty boldly.
And it's what
and it
expect,
does need those
it?
Bold elements. Yeah, exactly. You can't go from Daredevil.
There are going to be a lot of bodies piling up. Nobody gets to the top without stepping on a lot of people. And putting a lot of your own men down, because he's got to instill that fear, hasn't he, Cottonmouth, that if you let me down, if you fuck up, you get one chance and that's your lot. Otherwise, you'll never make it to the top, or you'll never stay there. Because while he's at the top, he says in his king's speech, doesn't he, there's always somebody who wants your crown. Everybody wants to be the king.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's other characters that maybe don't get enough time in it as well. I'd say I quite like Scarf before he's killed off.
Scarf and Misty had a really, really good back and forth. I didn't see him coming.
I think Misty as a character probably needed Scarf, you know, because she was good. And she had some good standout episodes and quite interesting story. But I think she struggled. I think often when they do the kind of good cop, bad cop stuff, they do need them both together to get that. I don't know, it seems to work. You know, it's that kind of on-screen chemistry. And she obviously did quite a lot of standalone and a lot of stuff with Luke. I just don't know. She was believable, and I think she's performed well. And she's obviously going to be returning. I think she's in the Defenders. I think
she is. She was actually one of the first casting announcements.
Yeah, and I think she'll be good, don't get me wrong. But I think sometimes, you know, what we talk about, and I think we'll come to it when we go to, you know, the Defenders when it comes around. But I think sometimes they need more of those actors on screen to make it work. I mean, you know, Avengers works, well, not better than Captain America, let's be honest. But it's the camaraderie and the interplay that works, you know, say in Civil War between Cap and Bucky and Falcon and stuff. You kind of need that on screen, and Marvel are great at introducing a lot of characters into something and making it work. And those kind of relationships. But when they do these series, it's quite a lot of standalone, do you know what I mean, time. Yeah. So the actors are probably under more scrutiny to deliver. And I think sometimes they just come a little bit short. We mentioned it, first series Daredevil with, who's the guy that we suddenly foggy that we kind of liked in the second series.
Yeah.
And they kind of grew into it. And I think with all of these, you just got to realise that, all right, it's been well produced and it's a great series, but they're still going to be learning lessons from it. You know what I mean? It's the first series of Luke Cage. Whereas you watch some of the series we watch now and they're in season 3, season 4, season 5, you know, Walking Dead's in season 7.
It's like anything, isn't it? Every character, no matter how well they're written and produced and directed, every character takes time to develop. No character just arrives on screen. Look, going back to The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Carol, everyone hated Carol.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, Carol is pretty much the most badass person in the show. Glenn was a whiny little bitch. Then Glenn became, you know, one of the linchpins of the group.
So, and I still don't particularly like Carl, but he's grown. Let's put it that way.
He was the ultimate whiny little bitch.
Yeah,
but yeah,
exactly.
It takes time. And just before we move away from them, Misty Knight is going to be an interesting one. Because in the comics, she is a cop. But she loses her arm following a bomb. There's a bomb explosion and her arm gets damaged. She then gets a prosthetic from a certain Mr. Anthony Stark.
Uh-huh.
And she forms a crime-fighting duo with a lady by the name of Colleen Wing. Now, anyone who's a bit eagle-eyed and attentive noticed that right at the end of Luke Cage, we see Claire, Rosario Dawson, who, of course, was fucking brilliant again and steals every scene that she's in, as per usual. She sees a little flyer on stuck to a lamppost, and it's self-defense and martial arts training, and the trainer of that is Colleen Wing. So you've got your little tiny Easter egg between Luke Cage and Iron Fist, because Luke
and
Cage
there was
and
a
Iron
few
Fist
of those. They were
a superhero team called the Heroes for Hire. There's absolutely no indication that they're going to do that in the show, but there will probably be some kind of a comment where those two are fighting and someone will say, oh, you two should go into business, or, you know, would you guys mind roughing someone up for me? And they're like, what do you think we are, Heroes for Hire or something? They've got to tip their hat to that, because that is their background going back to the, I don't know, 60s or the 70s or something.
Yeah, then they invariably do that. I mean, even at the start of Luke Cage, you got your Avengers references, didn't you, and stuff like that.
Oh, and they had the best thing ever when they showed him escaping from the prison. And he steals the clothes off the washing line. That is exactly the outfit that he used to wear in the comics, even complete with the metal headband.
And you said that. I remember you posting a picture at the time, and it's just iconically, you know, it's just perfect way they've done that.
And you look at him now, and he walks around wearing a skin-tight T-shirt and a pair of jeans. But back then he was wearing, like, flared trousers and what looked almost like a silk blouse, and he's got the metal... the gauntlet bracelets on, and he's got the almost like an upside down crown. But that's what he was drawn as. That's what, you know, superheroes in the 70s were a lot camper and a lot cheesier than they are now.
I bet they, I'd love it. You see those kind of things on Facebook or on Twitter where they roll back series to look like the 80s, 70s.
Yeah.
There's some absolutely belting ones. I think Luke Cage has been done and it was just hilarious. But it was
just a nice tip of the hat, wasn't it? Just a nice little...
Yeah.
A nice little salute from Marvel Netflix, as they've done with other seasons, just to say, look, he's never going to be on screen for more than 10 seconds like this, but here you go. Take a couple of screenshots now, off you fuck.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, we've been talking, I don't know, quite a serious debate, but some good topics on this, actually, this evening. So I think it's, you know, the more you talk about it, and that's the way these series work, is the more you kind of find enjoyment out of the smaller elements of it. And why we do this podcast, other than our enjoyment of it and enjoyment of the things we watch and read, is because kind of we get a buzz out of everyone interacting and the things, you know, we've grown a lot in terms of numbers in 11 months and we do really appreciate it. And yeah, Luke Cage is, you know, as soon as it's kind of released, the buzz is there and me and Stu kind of talk about it a little bit. Stu watched it within ridiculous. I think you probably watched it in less time than it actually took to watch it somehow. I don't know if you went through some kind of space wormhole on Flash or something, but you're quite incredible.
Yeah, blame Barry. It's all to do with Flashpoint. Yeah. Barry done fucked up the timeline again. But I think I watched it in maybe 3 days because I was ill.
And yeah, it took me about a week this time.
I watched 7 episodes in one day. That was
impressive.
That was like
I think I did that with Daredevil season 2. I think I nailed that in 3 days. But I think I like that about this. But the one thing with that, and I think that is good because I do find it quite frustrating with your big cliffhanger series. You know, the ones that are released every week, which, I mean, we love Game of Thrones. We're both huge fans, but sometimes having to wait a week is quite a painful experience. Do you know what I mean? And they're doing that with Westworld and do that with Walking Dead. I think the whole releasing it all at once thing, I think, works. I think the problem I've got is I think I should go back and revisit because sometimes when you rush through stuff, you might miss certain elements of it, and that's why it's good to talk about these things, because you maybe learn other things or you read other material and you just kind of analyze things in a bit more detail. We'll probably talk Rosario Dawson, but I do want to talk about Theo Rossi. Have you seen you haven't seen it?
No. It's safe to assume whenever you're going to ask me if I've seen anyone in anything, I probably haven't.
Yeah, unless it's comic related. Okay. Yes. He's in the Biker Gang thing, which I can't remember, Sons of Anarchy. So he's got quite a primary role in that. And I know a lot of people love Sons of Anarchy.
And that's been a long-standing show. Wasn't that 6 or 7?
It was seven seasons, and then get pushed in the end. And I really liked it. I think that the one thing that might attract you to it, if you ever get time, which I know you don't always have a lot of because you watch a lot of things, is Ron Perlman's in the
book. I know it's got Ron Perlman and Charlie Hunnam.
Yes, Charlie's obviously in... Is he in any comic book films? I think he's probably going to be.
I'd be surprised if he's not, because he's one of those. He's in that group of actors that seem to be in, you know, like having a bit of a...
Yeah, he's in Pacific Rim, which is obviously not a comic, but it's in that kind of ilk of modern.
I fucking love Pacific
Rim. Yeah, it's a good film. They've confirmed number 2 to be filmed soon, I think. So.
Do you know who my favourite character in Pacific Rim was?
Go on.
The Bulldog.
Oh, nice. yeah, that's a good film. But you wouldn't expect any less. And that links back to Hellboy, I guess, because it's the same director. And, you know, there's a lot of cycles in these things. So, but, yeah, he I thought, Shades was great, to be honest.
Did you like him straight away?
No,
I didn't.
And the problem is, and I know you've not seen Sons of Anarchy, but the problem with things like that is if you know a character so well from a series, and John Bernthal didn't do it at all for me with Shane and going into this role. I guess he's only Shane for a couple of seasons. Do you know what I mean? So it's not like he's in it 7 seasons and stuff. But when you see an actor very regularly, you tend to take their past performances into your mindset. So I could just see his role, and I can't remember what it was in Sons of Anarchy. I could just see his performance playing out, and it's difficult at times. But actually, I think he grew into it well. I thought he was a bit too standoffish because he was doing the whole Shades character.
He was the go-between, wasn't he? He was the face of Diamondback's operation, and he was always talking about him. but we never actually saw anything of him. And it could have been like a Negan moment where it turned out all of a sudden that there was no Diamondback and it was just Shades or something like that.
Yeah, but then, I don't think he would have been able to pull that off.
No.
He didn't have a villain. He doesn't have a villain sensibility about him. But I did think he fit that role pretty well and grew into it a little bit, as it would be known. So.
And he, again, as we were saying, he did develop, didn't he? And you did sort of, his conscience started to come out a little bit more, and he seemed to be less of a sleazy bastard. And he sort of started to even have principles where there were certain things that he just wouldn't do. He was okay with, you know, X, Y, and Z, but he seemed to have a line in the sand that he wouldn't cross.
Yeah.
And he was good. He was one of the more positive portrayals from the show, and he picked up, I think, where Cottonmouth left off, because I do think there was a bit of a gap.
I think there was a bit of a gap and a bit of a hole in there. And I think even the kind of when Pop died, I think you missed his character as well.
That was just hard going. That Pop being in that, because I've only ever seen that guy that I can think of in one other thing, and that was in Banshee. And
right.
He was absolutely fantastic. Similar sort of role, very much an aging mentor. Obviously, completely different backstory, but he was just the dialogue between him and Mike Coulter was just fantastic. It was so utterly believable. They really did seem to have that adopted father son relationship going. And when he died, that was just cold, because you can see that moment, can't you, where Luke knows what's going down. And
it was an unwritten rule on the block, do you know what I mean? And that's when they crossed the line with Cottonmouth, and that's kind of what was the beginning of you know, Luke Cage, obviously, retaliation and things spiraling out of control, really. So,
but he's got that moment, hasn't he, where he knows he's got the kid and he's got Pops, and he knows whoever he doesn't put his body in front of, there's a very realistic chance that they're not walking away from it. And he has to go and save the kid, and, you know, he obviously wishes he could have gone over and saved Pop, but he couldn't in good conscience have let a 13-year-old kid die or something.
Yeah.
And that scene was harsh, but then, as we mentioned before, that's when the guy gets killed, isn't it? He pushes him off the roof after that, because, like you say, no, you do not go into that. And he told him, didn't he? He told them to go and do some surveillance. Don't fucking move on them. Don't do anything until I get there, or until I, you know, tell you any different. And it was nice that although Cottonmouth was a low life scumbag, drug pushing,
there was some
murderer,
principles there. He had the street principles. Yeah. You know, it's kind of street rules, isn't it?
No matter what had happened, he still had that deep seated respect for Pop.
Yeah, I've got to give a bit of a shout out. Ron Cephas Jones, who played Bobby Fish. Bobby Fish was the other guy who's in the hairdresser all the time.
The one playing Chess.
Basically came the proprietor kind of thing of Pop's Barbershop. And I thought he was brilliant in it, but I didn't think they got enough airtime. I think the role I kind of accustomed him to is the role of the... is it the reporter in first season of Daredevil?
Don't ask me what his name is, but yeah, I know what you mean.
And I think sometimes you need that kind of voice of reason and that kind of experience within a series just to kind of get the main to bounce off. And I thought he did that well when he was called upon. I just don't
Ben
know
Ulrich.
If he was necessarily... Yes. I thought it was a similar thing, but I don't think... I think that's what this series lacked a little bit at times, is it's just a bit of consistency. And we said before, and a lot of people, main gripe with any of these series is they're probably too many episodes long. I think there's a couple of fillers in there where they just don't really need to do it. We mentioned it with season two of Daredevil, where he kind of went off. God, what's the girl called? The
Elektra.
Yes. And there was a couple of episodes in the middle where basically nothing happened. It was you know, and the same with Jessica Jones. It certainly had a lagging element of it. And I just thought sometimes this series had had elements where the narrative didn't quite fit, and it felt like at times they tried to rush things, and at times they went maybe took it a little bit too slow. I mean, when he'd been hit by that bullet, it felt like he was dying for like 3 hours worth of television, and it's like nothing really happened around that period of time. You know, there's stuff going on in the background and with the club, and but I think you always want to see what's going to develop on Luke's story, and there was a lot of kind of standstill, probably until Rosario Dawson was introduced properly, and then, well, no one gives a shit after that because Rosario Dawson's on screen, right?
And she's just brilliant again. The way they've woven her, she's like the glue. She's the glue that so far has bound all the other three together. And yeah. She's now very much adopted the night nurse approach. If she's the superhero's secret weapon, you know, she's the one they go to when they need to get patched up for the expertise, but also she's the confidant, so as well, isn't she? She's good with the advice.
She's just so good, man. I mean, like, as an actress, it's almost like you think, God, you know, I'm not saying it's not a good role, it's a great role for her, but sometimes it's like, God, just give her a bigger role on film, because she's done well as a career, don't get me wrong. She's obviously Sin City 1 and 2, which we've covered before.
She's not going to she won't be looking back on her career so far at the age of 37 and going, oh, well, I wish I'd done this and I wish I'd done that. She will be very, very happy with herself.
There's plenty of time for her, obviously, to develop into another film roles and take. It's just that, I don't know, I could see her leading something. Do you know what I mean? She never gets a lead performance, and she's so good in these and pretty much everything I've ever watched her in.
She's been excellent recently.
Yeah.
She's been the voice of Wonder Woman in a couple of the animated films, in Justice League, Throne of Atlantis, and the more recent Justice League.
Crosses over between DC and she also did Batgirl and Lego Dimensions, I'll have you know.
Yeah, she's also doing Batgirl in the Lego Batman movie as well.
Yeah, she certainly plays a certain a role, and she certainly works with directors and style. And she's in Death Proof and the Grindhouse stuff with, you know, Ricardo Rodriguez stuff.
Oh, and she was fucking incredible in them.
Yeah, and
films were just unbelievably good.
Yeah, she likes to obviously play alternative, you know, and I just think that's great because she's going to voice Batgirl and stroke Barbara Gordon in the Lego Batman movie. Sorry, coming out next year.
She was brilliant in Men in Black 2 was 2002.
Oh, God, she's in that.
14 years ago.
Shit, she's basically not aged, though, which is quite remarkable.
If you put the picture of her that I'm looking at from a Comic Con, I think it was last year.
Yeah.
She hasn't aged a day. So clearly she's some kind of a pod person. She must be, because that's just insane that she's not got a line on her in 14 years.
No, I know. She does at times. I think she at times carries these group of shows.
Definitely.
Don't get me wrong. You know, John Bernthal for me in Daredevil season 2 was the standout, but she's always the one that really does. Just when she's just got amazing screen presence, and that's quite rare, you know, and it does make a hell of a difference to a series of having someone of that caliber. Because all these other actors are great, don't get me wrong, and they've all, you know, especially John Bernthal, who I think is just, again, another one that's in line to do some crazy breakout, and I think he's only in his late 30s.
He's 40. I just looked at him.
It's just one of those. He's got elements of just going on to do something. You know, he's just got that crazy nature about him that he's just going to be a standout role, and I can see an Oscar at some stage in his career. But
it's the right time, isn't it, for people to be getting into this now? Over the last 8 years,
it is.
We've seen comic books go from a really, I don't know, whatever the opposite of mainstream would be. You know, comic books used to be quite niche. And if it was almost like B-movie elements,
weren't they? Yeah.
It might be good, it might be well received, but it was never going to be a blockbuster. Then Iron Man comes along and everything changes. Marvel completely rewrote the face of it. And now
they did.
It's now flipped again, where you've now got well-established, you know, comic books are the films at the minute. You're talking two or three blockbusters a year.
They are the blockbuster films. So the only thing that disrupts them is bloody Fast and the Furious. In terms of what makes money and what does well at the box office in the last 10 decades, it's pretty much those are the two. Films. Yeah, there's not much competition elsewhere now because
everyone's just doing it, aren't they? Everyone now, if you were an actor, you would be instructing your agent, wouldn't you, to be on to Marvel and Warner Brothers and Fox for and anything.
We've talked about it. I mean, the lady who's in Star Trek and in Avatar and in Guardians of the Galaxy. What is her name? That's going to bug me. I'll have to look it up.
Who?
Guardians girl. Green.
Oh, God, Gamora. Because I watched Westworld yesterday, I'm thinking Thandi Newton. Oh, shit.
It's not Thandi Newton.
That's going to do... I need to Google it. I need to Guardians, Google it. Otherwise
Guardians.
Guardians of the Galaxy. This is so professional.
Oh, Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana, thank you. Good God.
So, we said before that she's just a genius. So, she's basically gone, right, what's going to make me...
A fuck ton of money.
But a fuck ton of money. So, I'm going to do Avatar... Trilogy, quadrilogy, whatever the hell they're going to do. She's going to be in every Star Trek film, which is obviously going to be, was always going to be a trilogy, if not more. And then she decides to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's like she will go to any convention she wants for the rest of her life and earn a shed ton of money, as well as, I don't know, she's highly successful and talented actress anyway. But there's a lot of actresses, we talked about Brie Larson and various others that are just... I think the actresses are important as any of the actors, and the actors would be the one that would have got paid the bigger checks, maybe got the bigger leads, because obviously Captain America, Iron Man, you know, these kind of performers are key in comic book history and future, but the you know, they're nothing without the women next to them, do you know what I mean, in my opinion. And you know, Scarlett Johansson's obviously, oh, I don't know, she crosses between indie films to do the major blockbusters. She deserves a Black Widow standalone in one capacity or another.
Well, they've confirmed, haven't they, that it is going to happen.
Nice. I think they said you know, months ago. I just saw a trailer for her in Ghost in the Shell, and it's like, you know, she looks amazing in that, and you know, you never would have thought of her in something of that a role before the Black Widow gig came along. Do you know what I mean? She's made that role more than her own. And I think that's the thing with these series. You know, the powerful women are as important, you know, in any capacity as the men are in it. So this is such a highbrow pod for us. Jesus, well, we need to go back and make a fart joke or something.
To go back to Rosario Dawson, it's all right. I'm just about to bring the level back down. Wilson just wanted to make a point about Rosario Dawson. So there you go. I've got rid of the highbrow. If you think, like you were saying, she's in there with Daredevil. So there's the blind guy who can see, who's incredibly well trained. She was in 9 episodes of that. She was very, very briefly in Jessica Jones, who is a woman, a very slight, slender woman.
Indeed.
She can't fly anymore, but she can leap tall buildings in a single bound. She's incredibly strong. She's got a pretty high tolerance for whiskey. You've then got Luke Cage, who is essentially bulletproof. And yet, Rosario Dawson is just a normal woman. She's just a nurse with a normal background, nothing super about her. And yet, they all depend on her. Daredevil is absolutely 100% dependent on her because she's his backup. She's his cavalry. When shit goes wrong, he turns to Claire.
And shit goes wrong a lot in that first series.
It really does. You know, that brilliant scene when she gets him and he's crawled out the dumpster and he's basically dead. And he's, when he's first sort of he's explaining his powers to her when he's like, oh, they're 3 floors down and one of them was wearing too much aftershaves. And she's like, how the fuck are you doing this? And, you know, she slowly comes into that world. So by the time she gets to Luke Cage, she's like, yeah, fine, you're bulletproof, it's okay. What do you want me to do? And another thing, with her being, she's an A-list actress.
She is.
For her to be doing this show, I'm sure there would be a lot of people who would have got that call and gone, well, I'm sorry, but I'm kind of looking for a film at the minute. You know, I'm after a franchise.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would have turned up their nose at what is a supporting role in, a Netflix series is obviously never going to come anywhere near to making you the sort of money that a Fox Warner Brothers or a Paramount film will. But fair play to her for having the foresight, to look at it and go, you know what? This is a really good role. This is going to be a good role for me professionally. And she's taken
it damn seriously as well. Do you know what I mean? Because you do see actors of a certain caliber come onto shows, and often they just feel like they're just breathing through it. You know, they've read the script the night before. And you can feel that. If you watch a lot of television, do you know what I mean? You can feel when an actor is clearly either out of their depth or just kind of just basically just going for the motions. Do you know what I mean? And she's clearly not. And she's the key to this and key to probably the other two series. And I think
I'll be amazed if she's not in Iron Fist. Because what happens
you will
with
be,
Iron Fist
100%.
I can't remember if it's in Tibet or Nepal or something, but it's somewhere
but it's
out in Asia.
Doctor Strange connotations,
And he comes back to New York. So you'd think that there's going to be some kind of a moment where he's out, he's experimenting with his powers. This is a stupid prediction, everyone.
Yes, let's put this out there.
Just for once. But he's going to get himself hurt, and somehow he's going to end up in Claire's company, and she's going to be like, Jesus, how many more of you guys is there? Any more to explain? Any more coming out? Maybe, you never know, she could even be the way that he gets in contact with the rest of them. She could say, well, you know what? I know a guy that you might want to speak to.
Love these predictions. You have no basis for these, but it's just going to keep rolling. You're right, though. She will be in it. Without doubt, she's the one that links it all together. I think what's most exciting about Luke Cage and the other two is the fact that they're all going to come together. I mean, that's why, like, Avengers was peak. And obviously, you know, I think we're going to do a pod, which you were slightly less enthusiastic about, but I think we're going to do a pod about our favourite Marvel films and do a countdown of some description, a bit of a discussion. Not that we don't talk a shitload about Marvel as it is. So the Defenders is going to be huge, probably. And like with Avengers, it's when all the kind of main characters come together. And I just think
it's going to be a challenge
back on these series. It's going to be a challenge, yeah.
Certainly for Netflix, because you think they've pretty much got to bring, it's not just all the major characters. You think each major character brings in their sidekick. So when you bring Daredevil in, you've got to bring Foggy and
of course
Karen.
But depends on what level. Do you know what I mean? I think you've got to know that they've shown that they can cross over elements subtly, and obviously Luke Cage is quite heavily featured, like we said in Jessica Jones anyway.
And that was a good introduction, wasn't it? You can see that was very, that was almost like an audition for how's the character going to be received. And you never know. If you wanted to be cynical, it could even be a case of how are they going to react to a black guy showing up to what is still a very, very white dominated industry or type of TV and film. And he was brilliant. What he offered the show in general, and then especially what he offered Jessica. You know, she needed somebody that she could really relate to. And it's now going to be interesting going forward.
Yeah, I know.
Sort of timeline-wise, are they going to have... Because in the comics, it's no secret. They end up together, they get married, they have a kid. Are they going to try and rekindle that? I would imagine they will, because they are so true to the comics, to the source material. I can't imagine they're going to ignore such a massive arc.
No, I think that'll happen, and I think that's going to be quite interesting. I think obviously we haven't seen what happens with Iron Fist in terms of, you know, where they take that, but I just think you're going to see the combination together, and yeah, there's some reason to be a bit nervous, but I think the filler episodes I talked about, they won't need filler episodes when you've got...
Not with a cast
kind of,
like that.
No, that kind of cast, everyone's obviously looking for screen time and everyone's going to be needing to have enough written in. But I think they're going to take up I think they showed with Daredevil Season 2, they can probably notch up the action a little bit more, you know, and I think they'll do that. And they did great elements of that. I mean, we haven't talked about it, but that hallway scene when he rips off the car door.
Oh
my God, what an action scene that was.
They've become now, Marvel Netflix whole shtick is hallway scenes.
They love a hallway
scene. Daredevil's had two. the best one so far has still obviously been Punisher in jail.
I think K secretly works for Marvel Netflix.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Given his talk of how the lighting was, narrative on that. Yeah, he's either a consultant or a key chief coordinator.
It's going to be some kind of long, convoluted job title that basically means he sits down and talks to them about stuff.
If it's K, it's a long, convoluted anything. But, you know, love you, man, anyway.
They do love a hallway scene, and that one was...
It was great.
It was a good way of showcasing his abilities without going over the top. I mean, the amount of bullets that were hitting him, it really showed it. When you had the guy behind the grated door, and he's got a fucking light machine gun, and he's putting hundreds of rounds into him, and they're just bouncing off him, and then he just knocks the shit out of him and boots the door through. Mike Colter must have had some serious fun filming those action scenes.
Yeah, and they really did. I mean, it showed with this and it showed with Daredevil that they can take it up a notch. And I think they'll only show that more. But Defenders is going to have to. Do you know what I mean? It's going to have to be this time sum. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to be like Luke Cage where it's a music-driven, you know, quite close-quartered. You know, they're going to need your close-quarters fighting scenes because that's the way they shoot and that's their style. But with four... presumably characters
fighting.
It's
going to be frantic.
It's going to be different. And it's going to take some adjustment because it's a big step. You know, it will have been probably the biggest thing they produced. Talks of, you know, Breaking Bad and Making a Murderer and whatever's been successful. But in terms of a scale production, I think it'll be the biggest thing they've produced. So,
On their sort of scale, it's very much like Civil War, isn't it?
You know, that's my point.
Marvel,
yeah, it's like
Marvel
Avengers
have done
or
everything.
Civil War. Yeah.
They've done everything so well with all the casting and the fighting. But for them to be putting together a fight scene between 10, 12 major characters, logistically, was a nightmare. So, and you think about it, they were doing it on an airfield. This
exactly.
isn't going to be taking place on airfields. This will be corridors, clubs, alleyways.
It's
going to be in small rooms. And you would imagine there's probably not going to be many times when all four of them are fighting together because you wouldn't see it. Maybe they'll all be in the same building, but, you know, two have gone up, two have gone down.
I think
down
they'll
or
like a lot of warehouse scenes, is my prediction. They love a
like
warehouse.
I was
New
just
York.
Thinking like Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
That scene where Batman comes up through the floor, because then you've got the environmental stuff of, you know, Luke Cage can put people through walls, Iron Fist can, you know, punch through
things.
Be
interesting
and
what they do with Jessica Jones as well. It will, because
she seems like the weak link. She really
does.
Well,
she does, but you know that she's got so much potential to not be. So I'm hoping she's been put through, you know, a lot of kind of stunt classes, you know,
I mean the
fighting
character.
Classes.
I mean the character of Jessica Jones could
well,
could
I know,
even be the weak
I know,
link.
And I think a lot of people say that the villain carried that series. You know, if you're being truthful,
Without a shadow of a doubt. If you took David,
but
Tennant
she's
out
got
of
that great dry kind of wit, you know, and that kind of
and Kristen
dark
Richards great.
Sense of humor. Yeah, she is.
She's a look. The thing is, whenever you see pictures of her now and she's smiling, she doesn't suit smiling because she seems so comfortable being miserable.
There's a lot of great gifs of her looking pretty pissed off on you know, roaming around on Twitter. So,
Jessica Jones. She's absolutely brilliant and she seems more at home. You know, some people were born to play certain roles, weren't they, as we say pretty much every episode. She looks like she was born to play the brooding, moody.
Oh god, yeah, she's got that nailed to a T, basically.
When you think about the rest of them, I mean, Daredevil by the time Defenders rolls round, Daredevil will have been doing this probably 3 or 4 years.
Seasoned professional.
Iron Fist will be moderately new to it, but his is different because while he might not have been fighting crime in New York, he's been learning his powers and honing his chi away in Christ, whatever the fictional place he trains is. I'm thinking Nanda Parbat, but that's from Arrow. That's where the League of Assassins
are.
That
is from Arrow, yes.
And then you've got Luke Cage. Luke Cage is going to be an odd one because obviously at the end of it, he goes to prison. So at some point,
it'll be proven innocent.
Because
by one of the legal team, you would imagine.
Because that guy that you mentioned before, the chess playing fella in the salon.
He's got the envelope.
He found the folder, didn't he? So you'd think Luke's probably going to go away for a few months and then he comes out. But Jessica has had powers and then she's lost them, so she potentially could be. So it's, I mean, maybe the team even needs to do some in-team training to make her, you know, more stable.
That'll make it work. But she needs to up her game a little bit from that element of it. Anyway,
she needs to be able to throw a punch without it looking completely wooden and telegraphed.
I agree.
Because when you think, I mean, Daredevil's fight scenes are just so choreographed, but without looking cheesy.
No, they're perfectly choreographed. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They are.
They're like
they
a dance,
done,
just a bloody dance.
It's awesome.
And Luke Cage's were more about brute force, and Iron Fist is going to be introducing a whole new element of mysticism and his chi energy and his actual
Jessica Jones
Iron
wasn't
Fist.
Really about the action elements. It was the psychological elements of it, which is why it was such a good series. But obviously, like we said, with Defenders, it's going to need to be different. So,
yeah.
I think we've covered it well. I think that was really good.
It was oddly serious. Should we just say some dirty words for the next 15 minutes to balance it out?
Yeah, can you just start talking about stabby ones and all that kind of shit?
Well, this was
again.
More. This was pretty much a whole season of
punchy ones,
but there was a lot of shooty
ones. Punchy
ones.
There was a lot of shooty ones going down. Yeah, there was.
Oh, actually, just before we do go, there was one thing I did want to mention.
Go on.
One thing I really like about Luke Cage is superpowers are believable. You know, he's got impervious skin, but the rest of him is still the same. So if he was catapulted out of something, say he was in a car accident, he could still die because his organs would still be thrust into his chest cavity. He could still, you know, rupture his spleen or pop a lung or his heart explode or whatever. And I like that about him. They've not just gone the Superman route of going, he's impenetrable, he can do this, 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 and this. He's basically the greatest hero of all time. He's actually got quite a limited skill set.
He has got quite a limited skill set. Yeah, he does in a lot of ways. It's more about his determination, and that comes through from his like boxing elements in prison and stuff, and those scenes where he had crazy hair and a beard.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was just kind of fun. But I think they did get it right on a lot of the fronts. I think with every series you can pick holes in it, but you're just doing it for the sake of it a lot of times. I don't think it was as fun as maybe Daredevil. I don't know what it was about Daredevil. I think the action scenes and the choreographic kind of nature of it, I just think it's better. But and maybe because of the Punisher, because he's just incredible. But we're going to see more of it soon, and yeah, we obviously can't wait to watch it all in 48 hours when the next series comes out. So, it's been great.
Should be Iron Fist.
It should. I'm not sure what we've got scheduled. I think we won't be back next week, but probably hopefully something the week after. We need to talk Doctor Strange soon.
I think we're actually almost okay to go, because if I remember rightly, I think Joey saw it at the weekend.
I want to be involved, obviously.
You'll be on this one, because it won't just be Joey and I talking comic shit this time. So, that one was pretty well received.
It will be talking shit accents, but, you know, that's me being a preview.
That's you just being a massive bitch, as you have been this evening.
I'm in one of those moods tonight. Anyway, other than that, it's an incredible film, but still.
We've got some articles coming out soon.
Yeah, Joey's back on it. We really need to get on it.
Joey's sent me three that I haven't published yet. One of them's gone out today, which is completely gone out of my head.
Okay, we will tweet the shit out of anyway. So do keep kind of, I don't know, following us at Comic Pod, anyone that hasn't.
Please keep talking to us.
Keep talking to us. We really do appreciate the interaction. I know some people want to be involved in pods. I think you guys have got to logistically understand that it's quite tricky, and we do talk a lot as it is. So if we get other people involved, we have to be quite careful to not overrun for 90, 100, 200 minutes. And obviously, there's just we're still growing with this and still enjoying it. And yeah, thanks for keeping coming back, because I know there's quite a lot of you out there who do regularly, and we do genuinely appreciate it, because at the end of the day, we're just two guys having fun talking shit. So
can we get that on a t-shirt? It's just two guys having fun talking shit, then on the back.
Can we just rename the pod to that? the tagline.
You know what? I'm actually seeing a new image. It's just me and you giving thumbs up with really big shit-eating grins on our faces.
Nice. Right. Anyway, till next time, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for editing this, Nina. We love you. We will speak to you guys very soon.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.